Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's 10:34 on WGN. That was Friday's show, looking at the text line, and somebody said, "This can't be true, this thing I'm reading about Jared Kushner." And then over the weekend, it kind of went viral, the Vanity Fair piece that Catherine Eben wrote, how Jared Kushner's secret testing plan went poof into thin air. The administration did have, via Jared's stewardship, such as it was, a national strategy for testing, for contact tracing, for surging supplies to certain locations. And while it wasn't a perfectly conceived team, his summer college roommate, a billionaire guy, it wasn't the sort of people that have a lot of experience doing this. It sounds like, according to Eban's writing, that there was a plan, a federal plan, to sort of oversee things rather than making it as hodgepodge as it is state by state. Here's the money line, though. She writes, against that background, the prospect of launching a large-scale national plan was losing favor, said one public health expert in frequent contact with the White House's official coronavirus task force. That's Jared's team. Most troubling of all, perhaps, was a sentiment the expert said a member of Kushner's team expressed, that because the virus had hit blue states hardest, a national plan was unnecessary and would not make sense politically. The political folks believed that because it was going to be relegated to Democratic states, that they could blame those governors, and that would make an effective political strategy, said the expert. It was very clear that Jared was ultimately the decision maker as to what plan was going to come out. And so, while some people that were on that task force were anxious for a Rose Garden announcement by the president, poof, it went into thin air. Catherine Eban joins us now as a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. Good to be on.
Sometimes after something goes to print, new information comes to light, certain denials need to be addressed. Are you still standing by everything that I've just read and that I read in the entire article?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been nothing, you know, the White House has denounced the article as completely false, but there's no evidence that any of it is false, and we absolutely stand by it.
Is that the most troubling allegation to you in the report, in your story?
You know, what I try to do is just gather what the facts are and what I can excavate from what has been concealed to date. So, you know, I think what is clear to me is that diagnostic testing was an absolutely essential component of a good response. You can't fight what you don't see, right? Somebody said to me, if you have an invading army, you need to know where their troops are. So this virus is an invading army, and we're essentially flying blind because we don't have a comprehensive testing system. You know, what my article makes clear is that one was developed by a group working under Jared Kushner, and it spelled out the details of what a national plan would look like that would be well-coordinated, that would allocate test kits, that would allocate lab capacity. And if any of your listeners have had the experience of waiting, you know, 7-plus days to get COVID-19 test results back, you will know that our diagnostic testing system is broken because we never federalized it. So to me, that is really the central issue of the story.
So dubious though the qualifications for Jared Kushner's team might be, they did in fact come up with what you're making it sound like was a pretty good plan. Is that true?
Well, you know, they reached out, and they alone couldn't have figured out this plan. But what made it different is that they reached out to big-time experts in the diagnostic testing industry. And those people worked to guide the group towards a bankable national plan. And that was never implemented. They expected it to be implemented, and it never was. you know, the other detail that the story has, among others, is that the White House task force secretly procured 3.5 million tests, Chinese-made, that were sent through an Abu Dhabi-based company, and it turns out those tests never worked. They were contaminated and unusable, and they were procured improperly. So I think when you add all of these pieces together, you know, what you see is really a, you know, an effort that just went haywire. So, you know, it was ineffective. It didn't work.
I want to ask about the blue state theory, because in reading the story, it sounds like that idea of we don't need this because it's the Democrats that are going to be hurt and then blamed wasn't necessarily Jared Kushner's idea, that it came from someone else, and you just report that he would have had to have signed off on that individually or ultimately, I guess. So how involved was he with that notion?
Well, he was entirely involved with this task force. And we know from, you know, widespread reporting that he was making political decisions, you know, in consultation with his father and others inside the White House. So what those story documents is that there was this shifting sentiment at the White House that the virus was coming under control in April, that it would sort of subside, and that at that moment it was primarily hitting blue states. And so the thought was, why stand up this big national testing plan, which is a huge effort, when in fact you could just kind of throw it back onto Democratic governors to solve or to blame if need be. You know, and that idea that they were approaching this as a blue state problem has been widely documented, as well as in my article.
Well, clearly it was a blue state problem first, New York and New Jersey. Chicago wasn't mm-hmm. that far behind, but you quote a public health expert in frequent contact with mm-hmm. the task force, not somebody on the task force. And public health expert is singular. I wish that I had a name. I wish I had multiple sources to confirm this allegation.
You know, look, you never go with just a single source. So everything that is in the article is supported by the whole host of reporting. But again, because, you know, in investigative journalism, one fundamental aspect of these stories is that you protect your sources. So, you know, we put as much information out as we can, A, verify, and B, do in a way that protects our sources. But, you know, the article is supported by multiple pieces of documentation, which we obtained.
So think about how awful this allegation is, that they stalled or canceled a national federal rollout, which we desperately needed and still need to this mm-hmm. day mm-hmm. because it favored blue states first. And I'm just wondering if, because I don't want to believe that, your reporting notwithstanding, Catherine, I mean, I do, but I'm trying to imagine a way that that came to be without it being 100% political. And I think you just touched on it. Perhaps the belief was that it wasn't going to be so necessary because the thing was going to fade of its own volition, maybe when the weather got warmer, and therefore national strategy wasn't so necessary. And while that would have then put blue states in harm's way first, it wasn't the design of it. It's just that they happened to be ill first, but now this national rollout isn't so necessary. It looks, therefore, like it was strategized politically, but the political advantage was almost inadvertent. That was just the course of things. That's a lot of language for me, Catherine, but I just wonder if you would comment on the plausibility of my interpretation.
I think that that is a reasonable set of assumptions, you know, but there's something really problematic in all of this, which is the profound lack of public health understanding of how a pandemic like this is going to move and spread, right? So here is a pandemic
yeah.
that has crossed oceans.
Right.
And they're thinking it's going to stop at the blue states. And this is why, in a way, we are in such a profound crisis today, is because the administration has approached this virus as a political problem rather than as a public health
problem. Can you double down on that? I have to take a break here. Answer this question when we come back. It's a short break, but I wonder if you could almost as a percent. I mean, this is the thrust of why we're talking about this. Did the administration stall a federal plan because it was blue states or mostly because it was blue states? I mean, if you could just take me through that thought process just a little bit more. 1046 on WGN, Catherine Eban's piece as a contributing editor to Vanity Fair is about the slowdown by the administration of the of a national plan, if you will, how Jared Kushner's secret testing plan went poof into thin air. And just before the break, I asked her if she could maybe comment on the certainty or to what degree was the decision to stall a federal plan a political one. Catherine, could you pick it up there?
Sure, I can. You know, I can't assign a percentage to this. I can only, you know, I reported on sentiments that were expressed within the administration and within Jared Kushner's team. But what I can say is every single country that has successfully flattened its curve has federalized or nationalized diagnostic testing, right? I mean, if you go to a supermarket, and there's a big line, so this is in the old days, right, before coronavirus, and there were people who would guide you to an available line where you could go to checkout. And that's essentially what a national plan does. It doesn't leave states to figure out where there's lab capacity. There would be a kind of federal registry of who needs test kits, where's the lab capacity. You know, as one of my sources said, this is not rocket science. This is like creating UPS
right.
for an industry.
Yeah.
And that's right. I mean, that's what it is.
I'm thinking of the instance where Jared Kushner said, well, there are, they weren't PPEs. They were the respirators and we decide where they go. Do you remember the line I'm talking about?
I do very well. Yep. Yep.
Well, was
he was talking about the national stockpile,
and
he said it's our stockpile. Yes,
but I thought there was some pushback because at that time they said no, it's not yours. It's it's ours. It's the states, and who
right.
are you to tell us? So, was there a little sort of resistance at that moment to a federal oversight of these things?
Well, I think that this administration has resisted to. National oversight, and it's also resisted taking responsibility. So there has been a pattern of pushing things to the states and basically blaming them if it goes bad. You know, it's kind of like a political insurance policy, and I think that was at play here, but it did also particularly have to do at that moment when the national plan was buried. It was early April. And that was when this virus was primarily affecting blue states. However, any public health expert and every public health expert told them, we need a national plan. We need a national plan for this whole thing. We need the Defense Production Act, which would have allowed the federal government to massively scale up supplies.
Yeah.
You don't force governors to fight each other for Q-tips and reagents. But that is what this response has been really from the beginning.
We were championing Ford Motor Company ramping up to produce these things. I guess that would have been another way to do it. But is that almost the opposite of what you're describing?
Yeah. I mean, that's what somebody said to me was America invented the supply chain. From Ford Motor Company to Amazon.com, we're the supply chain experts of the world. And yet we sort of stand alone among industrialized nations in not nationalizing the supply chain response. That was a very purposeful decision from this administration.
You make an interesting case or tell an interesting story from the point of view of the mayor of Phoenix. Can you just talk mm-hmm. briefly about her story?
Yeah. So this is Mayor Kate Gallego, and she, as she described it to me, she had gone to FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, early on in April, and basically said, we need FEMA money to scale up testing. And they said, well, you don't have enough cases to warrant it. And her point was, we don't have enough cases because we don't have enough testing, so we can't document the cases. But nonetheless, she was denied support. Then fast forward to June, and her case counts start skyrocketing in Phoenix, as they had across the Sun Belt at that time. And still, the federal government was holding out on her, and I think we all saw, you know, TV footage over the summer of miles-long lines of cars waiting to get diagnostic tests, you know, and tests coming back 13 days later, which essentially means your test is useless, right? I mean, the point of getting a test is so that you get information that you can act on in a timely fashion. That's what testing is about. So when President Trump talks about how many tests we do, that's only part of the puzzle, right? The number of tests isn't what tells you anything. It's what you do with those results.
Well, it's a catch-22. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. We'll get you the testing that you need when your numbers go up. Well, my numbers aren't up yet because I haven't tested sufficiently. So then you never get the testing until, in fact, it guarantees that your case is spread and then the need is apparent. I wonder if that's kind of what happened. I don't know what happened in Florida and Arizona and Texas. It seems to me like a sort of blind's eye almost, right? That they just didn't want to believe it. They didn't want to be shut down. Who does? So they were resistant. Look at Florida, to the very idea of having somebody tell them that they couldn't operate. I wonder if the federal government...
I just want to say that that really undermines the whole point of preparedness. The whole point of preparedness is you prepare for something, and the best case scenario is you prepare and you don't need what you've prepared because it's under control. The worst case scenario is to not prepare until you're in an emergency, and then it's too late.
So is it too late now? I mean, I wonder what, if I had a magic wand and I said, okay, we're going to have a federal response, would it include this, and could it include this? A national mask law?
Yes. I mean, we should, look, if we say it's too late now, then we're essentially giving up. So we need to implement these steps. But as Dr. Rajiv Shah of the Rockefeller Foundation had said to me, if you don't get this stuff early, you are chasing an exponentially steep curve. So that's where we are now. We are chasing this curve, and we can't get it down.
He thinks it's going to be worse in the fall at the rate we're going.
You know, many of the experts I've spoken to have said that to me. One of the reasons is, right, we don't have a comprehensive diagnostic testing system. Schools are reopening or trying to, and flu season is coming. So how do you distinguish between the flu and COVID-19? If you can't make those distinctions, and the only way to do it is through testing, then the only solution you have is a blunt instrument, which is shutting everything down, which destroys your economy, right? That's why widespread testing helps you address that problem.
But when you say, you know, it's not like we have a vaccine to distribute yet, and boy, there's a scale problem where that becomes available.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are doing a lot of testing, and you say, okay, but that doesn't matter, it matters what do you do with it. What are we supposed to do with it? I don't have any pill to give anybody right now. So what would be what's the next missing step?
Yeah. Right. So the next misstep is, so let's take South Korea for an example. If you get a test and you're tested positive, you go into what's called supportive isolation. You're immediately quarantined. You're supported in that quarantine. They bring you food. And they trace your contacts, right, to find out who was in touch with you. So now our outbreak is so widespread that contact tracing is almost useless. But if we had it under control, the minute you got a positive test, you could spring into action to help prevent further spread, right? By supportively isolating the individual and tracing their contacts, which is that's the gold standard.
Catherine Eben is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. It's a fascinating piece, how Jared Kushner's secret testing plan went poof into thin air. You can read it online. You can pick up a print edition. Catherine, thanks for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Catherine Eben in the latest edition of Vanity Fair.